Someone posted a meme recently on, as old people say, the Facebook, that said, knowledge is knowing what to say, but wisdom is knowing when to say it. We, however, live in a society where we have the right to remain silent, but seldom the ability to apply it. What we say, when we say it, and how we say it, that can ratchet up tensions when they're already too tight, or bring them down. It can open up a dialogue or cause all dialogue to cease. It can harm or it can heal a relationship. Words, once spoken, cannot be put back as though they were never said. 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1 says, knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. Proverbs 4, 7 says, wisdom is the principal thing. So with all your understanding, with all of your knowledge, everything you can learn, get wisdom. Now listen, wisdom is neither loud nor silent. It's not active or sedate. It neither runs nor walks, sits or stands. Wisdom does whatever is right and good for the time at hand. And when it's not certain about what should be done, then it waits for clarity to know what should be done with patience from the only source of true wisdom, which is the Lord Himself. Most issues today are prosecuted in the court of public opinion before the actual facts are even known, if the actual facts are actually ever known. We've come to believe as a society that we have the right to know everything. And yet, we want to have that right without the responsibility that comes with it. We use social media like a big stick to beat people half to death with immunity. While the act of using caution and reserving judgment are seen by others as being weakness. But I can tell you that it is much, much harder to keep our tongue than it is to unleash it. And believe me, it requires more than just tight lips to exercise its keeping. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians. We're going to be in verses 9 through 12. We won't cover all this today, but we're going to read verses 9 through 12 in chapter 4 of 1 Thessalonians. Verse 9. But as touching brotherly love, you need not that I write unto you, for you yourselves are taught of God to love one another. And indeed you do it towards all the brethren which are in Macedonia. But we beseech you, brethren, that you increase more and more, and that you study to be quiet, and to do your own business, and to work with your own hands, as we commanded you, that you may walk honestly towards them that are without, and that you may have lack of nothing. Now, we've already spent a significant amount of time over the last few years on this issue of biblical love. That's what verse 9 is about. We touched on it lightly last week. You all should know by now that loving God with all of your heart, soul, and mind is supreme. The most important love we can ever have is love towards God. But from that loving God with all your heart, soul, and mind must be the motivation, and everything that proceeds from it, everything we do in service to God must come from that to one another and to others, or else it has no eternal value. That if that love is true, we'll love one another as we have been taught of God to do in Christ, which verse 10 notes, they in Thessalonica had been doing, not just in the city of Thessalonica in the region of Macedonia, but to all of the churches in Macedonia, which, by the way, were all poor churches. All of them. Thessalonica was not the exception. They didn't have wealth where all the other churches did not. They may have been even the most poorest church in all of Macedonia. And yet, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 2 says that in the midst of great trials of affliction, they gave to all those other churches in Macedonia out of an abundance of joy richly and liberally, even though they were themselves in deep poverty. They gave richly and liberally out of their poverty. But even so, verse 10, Paul says that they should increase more and more. Now, when he says increase more and more, he's not saying to them, you're not given enough. He's saying to them, love more and more. That's the increase that he's talking about. He's not saying, listen, in your poverty that you're given richly and liberally of, you're not given enough. He's saying, listen, just keep increasing in that love. Don't ever be satisfied that we love enough. Love more. Then in verse 11, he points to three things that are designed to keep them on track in the midst of the afflictions and the trials and the poverty. He says, study to be quiet, do your own business, and work with your own hands. We're only going to cover two of those today. We'll get to the last one next week. Now, in the 4th century, the theologian Jerome said, engage in some occupation so the devil will always find you busy. Another proverb that's a little newer, it's uncertain origin, but we've all probably heard is, idle hands are the devil's workshop. Some of them try to bring that out of Scripture, but there's really no verse that satisfies that proverb. It's still a good proverb. Now, the ideas presented in these proverbs is quite simple. It's that the unoccupied mind is more likely to wander into temptation and sin. That's really what it's saying. It's interesting to note, I believe, that the fall in the garden didn't come while Adam and Eve were tending the garden. It didn't come while they were working. It came while they were sitting at leisure under the only tree and the very tree that God himself warned them about and said, you can go and look at it, perhaps, but don't touch it. And where were they? But by the tree in their leisure. And it was in that time that the devil came to tempt them, not when they were working the ground. Now, the three things that are listed in 1 Thessalonians are intended to help counter our wanderings. The first one is study to be quiet. It's an odd saying, isn't it? Study to be quiet. Well, the word study in the Greek actually has a completely different meaning than you would think it does, but it means to be eager and earnest to honor God, and therefore ambitious and motivated to find ways to bring it to pass. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 9 says, we labor, we work, that we may be accepted of Him. We work to please God. And so study, it says, to be quiet. So in this context, the goal is to be eager to be quiet. To be quiet? Yeah. Now, the word quiet, hesukadzo, does not mean to be silent. It's not talking about joining a monastery where they don't speak words. It's not talking about not communicating with your neighbors, your friends, your husbands, or your wives. That word, quiet, means to refrain from meddlesome speech. Study, work hard in a way that will honor God by staying away from speech that meddles in other people's business. That's what it's saying. Speech that interferes with the concerns of others. We might say, sticking our nose in other people's business, which quite frankly has become the great American pastime. Engaging in conversations about things which we really know nothing of certainty about. To strive to hold one's peace separates us from a multitude of potential sins in the forms of gossip and slander and malice. It keeps us from becoming false witnesses whose words incriminate the innocent, which could possibly then turn around to be us that are being incriminated. Proverbs 10, verse 19 says, in the multitude of words there is no want of sin, but he that refrains his lips is wise. Ephesians 4:29. Let me read that to you. 4:29 says, "Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers." 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 10. "For he that will love life and see good days," sounds like a warning from your parents, doesn't it? "For he that will love life and see good days," if you want to live another day, "let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips so that they speak no guile." Matthew chapter 12, verses 33 through 37. Says, "Either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt, for the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks." Remember that. "A good man out of the good treasure of the heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned." The right to free speech is not the freedom to harmful speech, for which we will give account. It matters what we say. Even in the privacy of our closest friendships. How many of you have ever been betrayed by a friend? Probably everybody in this room, if you're old enough, probably over than 10, you've been betrayed by a friend somewhere. Someone that you had confidence in, that you gave your confidences to, that came back and used those things against you. What we say has consequence. Out of the good heart comes forth right words, and out of an evil heart, that which does damage. James, in the book of James, the Lord's brother, he has much to say about the tongue. We're not going to read all of it, but in chapter 3, verses 1 through 12, I'm going to give you a brief synopsis. He says in verse 2 that the spiritually mature man is known for controlling his tongue and not offending in word. He sets not offending with the words we say in the same context of being spiritually mature. Spiritual maturity isn't about all the stuff you know. It's not about that at all. You might be able to sit down and do Bible trivia and clear the board. You might pass all those posts that say, "Can you answer 10 out of 10 on these things? You're a genius." And evidently, I'm a genius. I didn't even know it. I barely made it through school, but I'm a genius. You might be able to do all of that. Doesn't mean a dog thing. If you can control your tongue, that says that you have some maturity. Verses 5 through 7, it says the tongue is a small member, but it's capable of great harm. Verse 8, it says the tongue cannot be fully tamed. Even the most mature individual will at times say things they should not say. It says it's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. It's always poised to say something. You're always holding back words if you have any wisdom at all. Verses 9 and 10, the most important section, perhaps in this whole section, it says we use that same tongue to bless God and to curse people. We come to church and we stand up and we sing these wonderful songs about the glory of God and the sovereignty of God and the love of God. And then we leave here and go talk bad about somebody at work or somebody at home, or we're doing something that dishonors God. Same lips, same lips. Now we need to note that all three of these things that we're talking about, two of which we'll get to today, are in the present infinitive. Now that means that we might fail at doing these the way we should at times, but that That should never be our standard behavior. That's what the present infinitive means. It means it's what you do repeatedly or over and over and over again. Just because we cannot fully tame the tongue doesn't mean that we shouldn't be working diligently to control it predominantly, so that our failures in doing so don't define who we are. We're not known by that. In fact, by not controlling our tongue in some given instance, somebody should look at us and say, "I can't believe that came from you." Instead of saying, "Oh yeah, that's the way he talks all the time." So that our failures don't define who we are, but repentance will define our failures. That when we do fail, we'll catch ourselves and we'll make it right. When you practice holding your peace, if you've got too many friends on Facebook, I can tell you how to cut that down real fast. If there's too many people talking to you at work, just hold your peace for a while and your circle of friends will get a whole lot smaller. People don't like spending time talking to someone who doesn't join in on the assassination in which they're doing in front of you. But the ones who remain with you when you hold your peace, they'll be good friends. And they'll help keep you from wandering. Number two says to do your own business. Now, little things matter. The word to do means to practice in order to create a habit. Now that's important, isn't it? Because the things that we do naturally, we don't need a habit for, do we? What do we create habits for? We create habits for the things that we're not naturally prone to do, for the things we have to work at doing. I mean, my workout routine, for instance, every day doesn't exist. Can you see that? I'm not prone to work out unless it's food to the face. This arm is powerful. Those potatoes are heavy. And so is the steak. But we work out in order to create a habit of working out, don't we? So to do means to practice something we don't naturally do in order to create a habit. The word business, idios, refers to the parts of life that pertain to me. So develop a habit to keeping your mind on your own business. That's what it's saying. Mind your own business means pay attention to the things that concern you, not the things that concern other people. If we commit to holding our peace, we will also have to commit to minding our own business, which means we separate ourselves from what pertains to others. You cannot even decide to do this. You can't decide to sit in with a group of people that you know are going to be blasting someone and just make the decision to remain quiet, to listen without speaking. That's not what it's talking about here either. It means we have to depart before we become involved even by hearing. Otherwise, we've just become non-speaking busybodies in other people's affairs, or unwitting accomplices. I mean, how often has someone come up to you to tell you something about someone else that you gave ear to, that after you got done, you didn't know what to do with that information? You didn't even want that information to begin with, but now you've got it and you don't know what to do with it. And if you open your mouth about it to the one that's talking to you, you might say something you shouldn't say, and then you might become an accomplice, because it might come back that someone says, "Well, I was talking to so-and-so over here about it, and they agreed with me." They might think you agree just because you stayed quiet. You might get dragged into something simply by hearing something that has nothing to do with you. And you can't protect yourself from that at all times, don't get me wrong, but we can choose who we hang with and who we listen to. There's an old saying that says, if you're not a part of the problem or a part of the solution, then shut it down. You might find yourself asking someone, "Why are you telling this to me?" If someone comes up to you and they start to talk to you about me, I'll do the same for you. Will that make you happy? Someone comes up to you and they start saying, you know, Pastor Greg, I think he's home too much. He's not, we're paying him money. He's not doing much. And Bob, on you, you listen to all of that and you don't shut it down. What if they come to me and they start talking about you? Because if they're talking to you about me, they're probably somebody else, if not them, is talking about you to somebody else. Why are you telling this to me? That's what I'll say. I'll say, stop right there. Did you know Pastor Greg? I'll say, well, hang on. Does this involve me? Why are you telling this to me? If someone comes to me and says, I've got a problem with Hollis, you know what I'm going to say to them? I'm going to say, then stop right there. You need to go see Hollis. If you're afraid to go see Hollis because she's so imposing, I could see Andrew maybe. He's got an axe in the car. I don't know if you knew that or not. He carries an axe in the car. He's got a Subaru, a tree-hugging car, and he carries an axe in his car. I'm not sure I get that entirely. If you're afraid to go to Andrew or to go to Hollis, I'll go with you, but don't come to me to talk about them. Go to them. That's where the problem belongs. Why are you telling me about this? Proverbs 26, verse 17. As soon as my fat fingers can get there. Verse 17 says, he that passes by and meddles with strife belonging not to him is like one that taketh a dog by the ears. And that's not talking about your friendly pet at home. It means you're grabbing onto something that you can't control. That's what it means. In the Gospel of John, one of my favorite sections of John, I mean, I really love the whole Gospel of John, of course, but John 21, Jesus has just told Peter that down the road he's going to be taken, and basically he's going to be executed. And in verses 21 and 22, verse 20, we'll go there. Chapter 21, verse 20. Then Peter, turning about, seeing the disciple who Jesus loved, that's John, by the way, following, the one that also leaned on his breast at supper and said, Lord, who is he that betrays thee? Peter, seeing him, says to Jesus, Lord, and what about this man? What shall this man do? He says, okay, you tell me I'm going to suffer. What about John? What about John? Jesus replies unto him, he says, if I will that he continues to live, he continues on until I return. If he continues on until I come back, what is that to you? You follow me. He says, it's none of your business. What happens to John? This is what we get with our children, isn't it? We tell them to go do something and they say, well, what about my brother? What about my sister? How come I got to do this? They don't have to do this. Why do they get to stay up? I don't get to stay up. Why do they get to drive? I don't get to drive. On and on and on. Keep your mind in your own business. God, according to Romans 9, will take the clay that he makes and make whatever he wants out of it and use it in any way he chooses to use it. We live in a world where the news is primarily gossip. You realize that? I don't care what you listen to. I don't care if you listen to Fox or MSNBC or CNN or whatever it is. It's mostly gossip. They don't vet stories anymore. And when they mess up, they rarely ever even acknowledge they mess up. We're listening to mostly gossip. My goodness, every storm that blows in is like a gossip. We get fake weather. It's going to be the worst weather ever. Every loaf of bread and bottle of milk in the entire state is drained because of this massive storm that's coming. We get 2 inches on the driveway. Schools are shut down. And you're looking outside going, I don't get that. Because they have 24-hour news cycle to fill, and they got to say stuff. If you're going to listen to the news, which is perfectly fine, just do it with some discernment. We are internally neck deep in issues that we know absolutely nothing about. And we argue over affairs that don't concern us. And the real weightier issues of life are ignored or missed in the process. Listen, you can't dig through a pile of dung without getting it on you. That's the way it works. So you got to stay away from where it's being dumped. Go around it. Take a different route. You understand? It matters. You sit down and listen to the news, and pretty soon you're up. Your arms are up in the air. You're pacing around. You're talking about how stupid things are and how stupid people are, and you're the only one that's right. Because I generally am the only one that's right. No, Carol Jean lets me know that's not true. It matters. What we say, when we say it, how we say it, it matters. Whether it's our business or somebody else's business, it matters. Whether we have the whole story or part of the story. I always say to somebody, when they say, I don't know why we did this or in this, moving troops here, moving troops back. And I'll say, you know, the last time I sat down with the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the President, they didn't say anything about this to me. And they say, you do that? No, I don't. And neither do you. Where do you getting your intel? Is it from the NSA and the CIA and the FBI and everybody else? Does that mean they're making good decisions? I don't know. But at least they're making their decisions, good or bad, with some information. I'm making mine with none. I have never been on the field of a professional football game. And I can tell you every bad thing the Dallas Cowboys have ever done. And all the good stuff. That's why I'm not a Cleveland fan. I'd shoot myself in the head. Or a Lions fan. That's for Bob. Back in the back. There are things I know something about and things I don't know anything about. I need to speak to the things I know something about. You come to me, you ask me a question I don't know, I'm not going to make one up for you. I'm just going to tell you I don't know. If I get it wrong, well, you know what? In 46 years, I've gotten a lot of things wrong. And what's going to happen for the rest of the years I've got left, however many those may be, I'm going to get more things wrong. I get it wrong, I'll tell you. Because we can't fully control the tongue. We don't know everything there is to know. But we need to speak as much as is possible to the things that we do. Stay out of other people's business. Protect one another. I would like to trust that you all have my back and I'll have yours. I'm not going to let somebody speak ill of you. I'm going to make them come to you, or else they'll find someplace else to go and they'll take the venom they've got with them. And we'll have more seating, but it'll be fine with me. Keeping your peace and minding your own business seems un-American. But wisdom has no national borders. As believers, we are first and foremost citizens of another country. We have a king who sits on a throne. We follow him. Every place that fits the American culture and the American way of life, we're free to do it. And every place it doesn't, we are not. First and foremost, above everything else and everything we do, we are Christians. There is a time to speak. There's a time even to be hurtful, in a sense. There's a time to intrude in someone else's life. Ecclesiastes 3 says there's a time for everything, a right setting and a right time. But it won't be for our own consumption. It won't be to make us feel better about something, or it won't be for so we can put you in your place. It will be because we love you and we want to help you And that means sometimes hard things have to be said. But most of the time, kind words will suffice. But all the time, words of grace must be used. It must be for the Lord and by His grace and to His glory, or we must keep our mouth shut and certainly out of everyone else's business. Amen? Next week, work with your own hands. It used to be something we never had to say in this country, but we do now. So next week we'll go there. And then verse 12 as well to close it out in 1 Thessalonians 4. So let's bow our head for prayer.